NTU World of Wisdom. Welcome to High Impact Thesis. In this podcast, we speak with researchers from various scientific fields to talk about the motivation, goal, and potential impact of their research. We also want to give you a sense of how a PhD is carried out with an emphasis on the PH, the philosophical aspects involved in pursuing a PhD.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the HIC podcast. Our guest for today is Siwi. He's a PhD student at the School of Mechanical and Aerospace Engineering at NTU. So, Siwi, thank you for coming and welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to join you all today.
So, I think we could get started maybe by having some general sense about the research area or research field you are working on in simple terms first. And so if you had to explain it to someone who doesn't have any background or any solid background in your research area, how would you go about describing it to him?
So to start my the general background of what I do energy conversion and storage, basically. We are a special branch in mechanical engineering school that deals with chemicals. So I do mostly on the electrochemical processes like batteries and special electrochemical processes for energy conversion. Then this special project that I'm working on is something to do with electrical responses and electrical work. Mm-hmm. What we do to give a very general idea. Yeah. So imagine you have an aircraft for military use. We want to fly it up, but we don't want people to know that we are there. Mm-hmm. So we want to coat this plane with some special material that can absorb the radar signals to prevent people from noticing. So this is the material that we are working with. This special material is able to absorb the energy that is sent from radar and then let it disappear within the aircraft itself. Mm-hmm. So the interesting part is that we are able to tune this material so that we can improve the absorption or tune this material to reduce the absorption. So something like reflecting it back out. And then because this material is so small, we can tune the shape on the aircraft so that it will reflect towards somewhere else. So something like mirror effect that is used for stealth aircraft. So the most interesting part about this material is that we can do all these things.
What's that?
We can change it. We can modify it.
All right, I see. So what kind of materials exactly are you working on?
Okay, it's a 2D material, two-dimensional material. It's very thin, something like a sheet of paper, much thinner than a sheet of paper. Something like graphene that we all know about. This is the new upcoming material that is called Maxine. So like I mentioned earlier, this material is something more similar to metal plates, like little metal plates that can be a semiconductor when we tune it to one side, and it can become a metal when we don't do anything to it.
I see. So are they plates in the sense that they are shaped or formed to look like plates, or are they actually like graphene, two-dimensional materials?
They are more like graphene. That is why the ENE at the back, I mentioned Maxine, so the scene ENE at the back is how it looks like in real life. It looks like graphene.
Oh, so you can have like single layers of this material, monolayers?
Yes. Monolayer. But actually, due to some limitation, the most crystal structure, it is triple layer in three atom stick.
I see.
So just to clarify, when you say monolayer or triple layer, this is
the atom thick.
How like the thickness of the atom of the material,
yes.
Right? So if it's two atoms thick, then it's two layer.
We call it multi-layer.
Multi-layer.
But because it's a crystal, so we consider it as a monolayer. So there's a lot of terminologies that I thought that we should clarify. Mm. And it's kind of confusing when people say graphene is monolayer and another crystal structure has three crystals. They are also monolayer. But actually, it's because the whole material itself is considered one unit is on its own.
Mm.
So yeah. back to your question, how we consider whether it is a plate form or whether it's on the shape itself, actually is surface chemistry. So apart from the three atom thick kind of layer, monolayer, on top of this layer, there are what we call the functional groups.
Mm-hmm.
So these functional groups are what we do changes to. So for example, it has fluorine, it has oxygen on top. Something like your kueh lapis. Imagine kueh lapis, on top of kueh lapis, you put on some sugar.
Okay.
Yeah, so we are changing the sugar to salt, something like that. So mm-hmm. it gives you the idea that you have three layers of kueh lapis. A kueh lapis has multi layers. So imagine we only just take three layers of kueh lapis, we put sugar on top of it. So that is a visualization of how this material look like at nanoscale. So bring it down to a size smaller than the thickness of your hair.
Oh.
That is about the material.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a small kueh lapis with sugar on top.
Oh. Okay. So you mentioned like for example, one I would consider like a military application. Are there any applications you have considered in your...
Oh yes, of course. First we have considered the perovskite solar cell. So just now we mentioned by Muhammad, he is working on perovskite solar cell.
Yeah.
So I was quite interested when he was talking about that. Because I'm working on this material, and we can modify its surface chemistry such that it has more affinity with the gold part of the perovskite solar cell to do some magic, means electron transfers. Or hole transfer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So during this process, we can tune, we can change the sugar to salt, or we can change the salt to something else, maybe MSG.
I want to ask about these materials, can you usually form a very large area, have it on a very large area, these materials, or is it only in a very small micrometer scale?
Oh, of course, this is one of the most pretty part about 2D materials. We can make it into a large area. So when people say that, actually this material can cover the whole soccer field. Yeah, so theoretically, we can do that. And practically, we can achieve almost a soccer field.
Mm.
But that is because we need that amount to reach,
yeah,
to cover.
Because from what I know, usually 2D materials are not very easy to have them on a large area.
Yes, it's not easy.
It's not easy. That's the idea.
But this material is pretty easy. I would say because it is small metal plates.
Mm.
So we are able to spread the metal plate over a large area. So one of the techniques that we use in batteries is very well known is to just scrape, paint it. We paint it onto copper foil kind of thing. Yeah, we paint, we put it into a solvent, and then we paint it like what we do for oil painting.
But
how do you ensure the thickness of the...
Yeah, that's the question.
We make it thin first. We have to make it thin first. Usually this process is also very, very used in a battery science, which is call this word called exfoliation. We exfoliate the material. So we tear the kueh lapis into pieces, into their layers, and then we spread the layers into this solvent that keeps it afloat.
Okay.
And then we turn it into a paint, and then we paint it on. So this will ensure that most of the pieces are small. But during the application that we are looking at, usually we want to do it fast. We do it, we want to have a large amount.
Right.
So it takes more effort actually to exfoliate all these materials. So at this point in time, to make it into large scale, for example, a military plane, we are not able to reach so much because the material is expensive. The material is very difficult to get it homogeneously spread.
Mm-hmm.
But when we go to a small toy plane, UAVs kind of toy, we will be able to get it on quite easily because it is sufficient. But it's still in the development stage. although the potential has been proven after so much research.
How long have you been involved in this research?
For this project, I've been working on it for the past 4 years.
Oh, wow.
Since I started the project. But we only got a breakthrough in the middle of my PhD. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh. So because we managed to find the optimum condition to do that. Yeah. Mm.
So and, as I understand, you're now almost finishing
yes.
your PhD, right?
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So one application, as you just said, is a stealth aircraft.
Yes.
So are there any other applications for these materials?
Yes, yes. Perovskite. Then there are still many other applications. For example, electrocatalysis. Mm-hmm. This material is very good as a support for platinum and support for the fuel cell material. Just that we are quite sad because this material is too
oxygen sensitive.
Yeah, oxygen sensitive. Okay. So putting into oxygen technically kind of kill it within a few minutes. Yeah.
So what happens exactly when you put in oxygen?
So when we put in oxygen, we call it dead technically because it turns white. Uh-huh. It was black, then it turns pale, and then it goes white and it's dead.
I see. Without getting into the like technical details, like what are like the most significant properties that are lost when it's
electroconductivity is the most important part in this case. It will turn into because I'm working on titanium based material, so it will turn into titanium oxide. And titanium oxide at thick titanium oxides are really very, very bad conductors. But when they are very thin, they are very good conductors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the stability is a very big concern when you are trying to use them for stealth aircraft.
Yeah. So during this modification that we have done, we realized that this modification kinds of passivated the material. So it becomes more robust and quite stable against weather conditions, etc. What is interesting also is that there are this little bit of titanium oxide actually passivated the material as well.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just one of the few things that is good about this material and why we say that it can do what we say it can do.
All right. Mm-hmm. So like the you said the titanium oxide itself can help in passivating the layer.
Yes.
You mean the titanium oxide that results from the exposure to the ambient environment?
Yes. Yes. Just ambient and alone. So we do not put in too much of the... So we don't expose the whole thing into water kind of environment. We just expose it to air. It is still quite stable. There's a thin layer of titanium oxide created on top that kind of passivates the material. Then if we put it into water, it's practically dead. So yeah, I need to retract just now what I say. So it's water that is killing it. The water causes it to expand. So it causes the whole structure to expand.
Mm-hmm.
And then it allows oxygen to attack the material from every side.
Mm. All right.
So in air, it will just be passivated by the TiO2 on top. And then inside will be quite safe. Something like aluminium oxide.
Mm. Silicon oxide, I think also something similar happens.
And it will still retain its function.
Yes, it retains its function, its purpose, and most importantly, the conductivity that we want.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned earlier that you can basically control the material. Is that in the process or is that after deployment, like later?
No, it's, we have to process it before we put it on. So it's like a tailor-made thing.
I see.
Yeah.
So in terms of their history, when did these materials start to get some attention from scientists?
It's very recent. This is the most recent material that we have found. That our researchers have found for 2D material class, 2011 actually. 2011. Yeah.
Oh, 2011. Okay.
Yes, that's 2011 recent. Was the that's most recent material. Yeah.
Unlike graphene.
Yes.
Yeah, it was.
Graphene is about 2004. Mm-hmm. Then this material is about 2011. Yeah. Any other 2D materials that you have heard of, like MOS2, they are much earlier than that. 2009, 2010. 2009, 2007, around there.
So you also mentioned that you got involved in this project about 4 years ago, like when you started your PhD. So just a little bit of background on your side, like on your interest on the project. Mm-hmm. How did that develop?
It's a long story. It's quite a long story. Actually, no, it's not that long. Just that I fell into this project.
I see.
Yeah, so when I took out my PhD, I didn't know that I'll be taking on this project. But then after a while, my prof tells me, hey, this project is what you're doing. And I was like, okay, fine. I'm still learning anyway. Uh-huh. Because my background is from mechanical. So it took me quite some time to pick up materials and electronic.
Mm.
And electrical. So the first 2 years we are trying to learn more. It's more of the learning phase. Then the next 2 years is about the applying phase. That's why I say that we have most breakthrough on the second part of my PhD. Yeah.
Okay. So we like in the podcast here, in addition to talking about the broader field and the applications, we also like to dig a little bit deeper into your day-to-day activities in the lab, in the office. So for example, we would like to like capture your kind of problem solving techniques, your tools, all the things that the challenges you face like daily in your work, like if there's anything that comes to your mind you can share with us.
I think your question is how do I manage to go about surviving my PhD? Actually, I think the most important part of PhD is about having friends.
Mm,
mm. Friends, collabs, they are all friends. Okay.
Yeah.
I put them into one category, whether they are collabs or collaborators or just like what we are now, friends.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So the most important part is making friends, knowing more. Sharing, reading is quite tiring to be honest sometimes. But when you share the knowledge with your friends, you kind of get inspiration from them as well. Yeah. So I work with a lot of people during my PhD time, ever since I started. So I started working with EEE postdocs, followed by SCBE postdocs,
mm-hmm.
and then SCBE students. Then I work with France. I work with a postdoc from France.
Uh-huh.
We are working overseas. Most of you are working overseas. Yeah. So they are all project collaborators. So we build up rapport during the way. Then we share our knowledge. Every time we see new stuff, we share. That is the most important part, I think. Then when we realize there is something new, we will try. Once we try, we will find out more of what we don't know. We just keep digging and then voila, we have papers.
Yeah, that's another thing. Like you never know when you're going to get something. We just have to keep trying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you feel like through that process, it was kind of building up towards something bigger, or were you kind of just exploring different ideas?
I think both.
Mm.
Exploring ideas are what we PhDs are meant to do, because we want to explore, we want to improve the human knowledge, right? Then we want to find out, we want to bring our point of view to the world. That is why we are writing papers.
Yeah.
Then that is the exploratory part. The big idea, of course, we want to do our thesis always starts with the big picture, what we are trying to solve. We are trying to solve world hunger, etc. kind of thing. But in my case, I would like to work on energy, saving energy, building energy conservation, energy conversion, energy storage for the better technical improvement at this part. So I think that is my main goal.
Yeah. Mm.
So I've been working with people who are working in the energy field. I've been working with people who are doing conversions, including industry as well.
Mm-hmm. But now you are more focused on the Maxine's and their application for...
Yes. Maxine application, that is one. Mm-hmm. So we have quite a few papers on it already.
Mm-hmm.
I think two. Yeah, almost two papers on it already. Then We are also working on electric batteries. A few papers on that.
Uh-huh.
Then I'm working on electrolysis, electrocatalysis.
Oh, okay.
And okay. Now we are working on bioconversion.
I see. I wonder how does your research activity looks like? Like, do you work in a lab?
Yes, lab.
Wet labs? Mm-hmm. And...
Yes, wet lab, yeah. So I run around in wet labs more often.
More often, I see. Yeah. Okay.
So you so speaking of the wet labs, can you tell us a little bit about the machines that you work with for fabrication of the material, the testing and all that?
Our lab is quite small, but we have most of the equipment available for synthesis. We have tube CVDs. CVDs are chemical vapor depositions. So that is what I use most of the time to do the modification. So we do precursors, we do different kinds of gases to go through on the same material just to get to the material that I want to get. We also have a film hood, which is normal, where we do all the dangerous chemicals.
Chemical, yeah.
But I play most with solvents, like ethanol, acetone, methanol kind of solvents. Yeah. So they are pretty not dangerous to be honest, but they do pose some health risk in the long term. So I kind of reduce myself. So I do once, I will make sure that I make a big batch so that I can don't do it anymore.
Limit your exposure, yeah.
Yeah, so that I can continue my burning and then testing. So we do have quite a lot of equipments such as potential stats. They are used for electrochemical testing. We also do battery stuff. So we have a girth box to deal with lithiums and what is it called? Air sensitive material.
Mm-hmm.
So I do work with these items. Then recently we have added in filmmakers, means things to make film with. So we can make thin films using that machine.
Mm.
Then we also have photocatalysts. So something to do with light to do catalysis stuff. Yeah, and we have two GCs,
gas chromatography. What would you say, the most common equipment that you use almost like on a daily basis?
Microscope.
Of course.
Yeah, microscope, yeah. Yes. Uh-huh. Otherwise, most of the time, because this material is so interesting, we don't go too small. It's always in bulk. So we can still see it with our naked eye. So once we have done it, we prepare the sample, I will send it away for testing. We don't test in Singapore, partly because of collaborator.
Yeah.
They want to be involved.
I want to ask you about the characterization of the final product.
Mm.
What kind of techniques or methods do you use for, and what kind of things you are looking at? Is it the conductivity? Is it the...
Okay. Characterization, I do quite a few. Mainly to see what material are we getting. So the basic techniques for material sciences will be SEM, scanning electron microscopy,
mm-hmm.
the one that to help you see very micrometer level stuff. Mm-hmm. Then XRD, X-ray diffraction spectroscopy. Yeah. Then we have the X-ray photoelectron spectroscopy.
Mm-hmm.
This one is the XPS machine. So because of this material for rich surface chemistry, I rely upon XPS a lot.
XPS, yeah.
More than anything else, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Then we do transmission electron microscopy. So we want to see the atomic structure, atomic layer part. Because like I mentioned, it's 3 atom size. Usually SEM cannot see. So we want to see at a deeper field of view.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we do TEM.
So it gives you a zoomed in look at the
molecular
structure or the atomic structure.
Yes. So recently we just started to explore this thing called FIB, focused ion beam, trying to cut it at a atomic scale to look at it and how the termination works. So this is part of the interesting research that we are going through now.
I see.
Okay, maybe I'd like to go back to something also you mentioned earlier. You said mainly you work with like energy conversion, like storing energy, distributing. So how does that concept apply here to this material? Let's say with the example with reference to the fighter jets or airplanes.
I think it's another level. It's a different branch of this for the different utility for this material. Because fighter jets alone is just a surface coating.
Mm-hmm.
For chemistry part, the energy conversion part is more of the surface chemistry, which is has to be into the liquid, has to be on. It will take out the electrical stuff. So there is no evidence that this material can do solar conversion for now, because it doesn't do photoelectron, not like a solar cell in any sense. Yeah, so it cannot be put on the plane and then fly up there, get some energy, and then go back. Yeah,
but there's like that way. Potential with certain manipulation, you think there could be?
Honestly speaking, I don't think so. In that case, no. But if for perovskite solar cell as an enhancement, it is possible.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So perovskite solar cell, if you go deeper, is actually a flexible solar cell. More of a flexible solar cell compared to current rigid ones. Yeah. So if you put it into the perovskite solar cell use, it might be able to wrap it around a fuselage or something like that to go up to the sky, pick up some energy, supply the plane, etc. But at this point in time, based on the efficiency and based on the energy power conversion, I don't think it will be able to run the plane, not even supply the energy usage inside the plane. Yeah.
Okay, so we mentioned like airplanes, solar cells. What about like on the consumer level? Is there any potential application for such materials?
Potential applications, something like zinc air battery, the electric vehicle, because it is quite a good electrocatalyst. Once we do some modification, it has the potential to be a good catalyst. Yes, so we thought that it will be able to run at least, even though not overtake precious metal, it might be able to be a replacement for precious metal material for a fuel cell.
Precious metals, what kind of precious metals are used for
fuel cells? Oh, okay.
For fuel cells.
Just a background. So fuel cells make use of platinum, palladium, rubidium, iridium. These four types of
expensive
material.
Mm-hmm.
They are more priced as high as gold or even higher. Platinum is much more expensive than gold. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you use this. We use this material for a fuel cell. So in the astronaut spacecraft, International Space Station, they use this material to produce oxygen for the astronaut, to supply oxygen, or rather to supplement the oxygen for the thing. So they pee, and then fuel cell comes in, and the oxygen.
Oxygen is a...
Okay, so it's called electrolyzer.
Yeah.
So from the front, you go, you use oxygen, it is fuel cell. If you produce oxygen, it's electrolyzer. So it's just the opposite reaction.
Mm.
Yeah, both of them relies on platinum anyway.
All right, so let's now move on to the outlook, the future outlook of this research area. So what would you say are the potential, maybe near or long-term future applications in terms of like actual products? Do you see something happening soon, or will it take a very long time?
When we look at the research focus, whether we get commercialized, I think it's more about economical portion.
Rather than research.
Yeah, other than research. So economically, I would say no. Because there are really cheaper materials out there that can do the same job.
Mm-hmm.
Just that this material, because it has more functions, there are certain niche area that this material can go toward.
Mm-hmm.
For example, electronics. Electronics such as RFID or electronics such as supercapacitors, they are actually looking at commercializing these two areas, especially the RFID. Like I mentioned, because it can spray very well. So The founder of this material, Prof. Gogotsi in Ukraine, their group has already developed the ink properly to do to work as antenna, to work as a wireless antenna. So they are able to put it onto a very large piece of area so that it can receive signals based on as an antenna lah, to get the electric signal up. So they have already done that. So they say that they are able to create wireless antenna, wireless communication, and RFID using this technology. So I think very soon we will see the patent for that. Then for other commercial use, I don't think that they will be out so soon, because this material still has the fundamental problem that we cannot solve. Nobody is able to solve it yet, which is the oxidation problem.
Yeah.
Although I say it passivates it and let it stay very long, actually it only helped it by another few months. So in the end, air will still go into the material, and then it will turn white, and we pronounce it as dead.
Right. So in terms of research, let's say away from like commercial products, I think I wanted to touch on 2 points. So first, this point, right, like oxidation problem. Do you see potential solutions in the near future? And then the other thing is about the cost of the material. Because usually, I think the cost usually initially is too high for any commercialization, and then it starts to go down slowly. So in this case, how do you see the cost going down?
I think it does follow Moore's law a bit for this type of electronics. But the most important thing, I think, for now, and we see the trend, is that we are, instead of using the expensive magazine, we are using a cheaper magazine. So a magazine is a class of 200 plus material. Now, theoretically 200 plus. Actual synthesized 70 plus kind of magazines. So with this 70 plus, we have a range of prices. So we have materials such as nickel, we have materials such as niobium, we have materials such as vanadium and titanium, which have different price and they are much easier to make. Then with further research, we will know whether we can get even cheaper base metal. Because the next part of the material are cheap, like carbon is cheap. Then but the base metal is very expensive. So depending on how we are able to synthesize and what is the progress and what is the potential application for the cheaper metal, I think we can reduce the price. Because the most important part of this material is the affinity between the base metal and the surface chemistry.
And you mentioned that you work with titanium, right?
Yes, I work with titanium, yes.
Are you also working with other types at the same time? Or?
For now, no. For now, no. But we do have intention to create a different type of magazine, a different one compared to the already published ones.
Okay.
Yeah, because we see that there is no novelty in doing other kinds of magazine that is already published. We want to create something that is not published, and then we want to explore at computational level, and then we want to explore at the experimental level whether what are the progress we can make towards this material. Yes.
So all of these magazines suffer from the oxygen sensitivity, or?
Yes, all of them.
All of them.
Yes.
At a similar level, or some are more stable?
I would say all of them are almost the same, because what happened is that the surface functional group of this material is so oxygen absorbing. It absorbs oxygen very fast. And then when it absorbs, it starts to, something like kueh lapis, your sugar start to meet with the fire, it starts to melt. Then otherwise, if it is salt, you put on the something like meat, the water starts to come out. Then the salt dissolves. Something like that. It feels like that this type of changes that created an uncertainty. Furthermore, during the synthesis, it is so uncertain that when we do a test for this thing at one point in time, the next point in time we take, it will change slightly.
Mm. Mm. It becomes time dependent as well.
Yes.
Because the process is happening with time. Yes. And let's say you yourself and then your wider research group and then your wider community of researchers working on this topic, what do you know what's like their own ambitions with this material further in the future?
Apparently, based on the recent advance, recent reviews, I saw that Maxine have reduced interest on this material.
Oh, okay.
But I wouldn't say that it had died down, because I really don't know what they are doing. Mm. At least those that are not published, I do not know.
Mm.
But when we see this material, we know that it is versatile. It can do most of the things that what we want it to do. Then we see the potential of this material, although some researchers still really disagree with it, that this material still has any potential forward, because the price, the stability, there are still so many things that are much better than this item. But we still see baby steps moving forward with this material.
So if I understood you correctly, the one of the attractive points about this material is that it has... it's versatile. It can accommodate different functions at the same time. Okay.
Yes.
That's what makes it unique to...
Yes, I would say that is what makes it unique.
Mm-hmm.
So by now, we have tried quite a few applications. We have seen papers on a lot more applications. We have seen agreement between researchers that this material is really potentially good at the energy conversion
applications.
Mm.
So we thought that this direction we should go forward. Huh. We should continue exploring this thing, especially we have the advantage of we know that we have a certain material that can tune the properties to fit certain application.
Mm-hmm.
For example, perovskite.
Mm-hmm. I see.
All right, and then I think lastly, as we do in every episode, we'd like to kind of step away from all the research and all the technical details, go a little bit personal, know you on a like personal level. What are your interests, your hobbies? What do you do to, you know, take some time off research and just off the routine? If you can share with us.
Like most guys, I do gaming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but actually, I've been playing lesser games nowadays. I do cycling, I do swimming, I do badminton, sports, little bit of sports. Yeah, then I also do painting. So I was part of the hall community as a residential mentor. I suppose most of you are familiar with this name, but don't know what we do. Yeah.
But maybe you can explain.
Maybe you can explain it for people.
Oh yeah, sure. So residential mentors are hired by RE, residential education, to do pastoral care for students. So part of our duties are pastoral care. So we talk to students, then we understand their mental psychological need, something like whether they're stressed or not.
Mm.
Then we provide basic help, something like counseling if we need to. Not to the level of what counselors do, but we do keep a lookout for them just in case they need help. Then, but secondarily, we also do workshops to improve something like co-curriculum activities to teach new skills, learn new skills, establish social life.
Mm.
Then, I did for the past 4 years as well, Crespian Hall. So what I did was we do art stuff. We make wood craft, we make leather craft, we make paintings.
Oh,
yeah. Nice. So all these are what we learn. We also do photography and videography lah. So all this we learn from each other, my fellow PhD mentors. We learn from each other the skills. If not, we acquire some skills from outside. Then we learn and then we teach to the students here. So that is part of being an RM with Crespian. We do most of the stuff on our own. So we design new courses every year.
Yeah. Sounds like fun.
Yeah. So this kind of take away some stress from work. Actually, yes. My work requires most of hands-on work. So actually, studio helped me a lot by learning some technical skills that I can do.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this is something we all have to go through, learning this fact that you need to blow off some steam at some point. Like,
agree.
If you're just there in the lab all the time, then you won't get any progress done,
basically. Yeah, true. Yeah. We need to learn more skills. Especially, I think PhD should learn more skills.
Right.
Because learning only a single skill might be what we are supposed to do, but learning the whole thing might help us be better person in life. So,
And also, you brought a very important point earlier about making connections, making networks. People from your lab, your school, and just basically your community.
Yes,
this is very important for your career, and it's probably for your mental health. And
especially when you want to you have this KPI to hit to publish papers, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think friends will help you publish faster.
That's for sure. For
sure. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
You can see more things actually.
Mm-hmm. And also I don't know what's the saying, but it's like basically when you have multiple brains thinking at the same time, it's much better than one brain.
You need to understand that everybody that you're talking to are PhD level people. So they are smart. To a certain, at least they are very smart, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If they're not smart, they cannot be a PhD.
Yeah.
So yeah, the connection matters, and the quality that you want to come out with depends on all these people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Siwei, thank you very much for joining us in the High Impact Thesis podcast. We really enjoyed talking to you.
Pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Okay.